Hi, welcome to episode 429 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm Dave Elliott, and I think pork rinds are pretty tasty. Today, the 429th issue of the Fantastic Four, it's Fantastic Four, Volume 2, Number 13. The last issue, again, from November 1997. World War III, Part 1, Life in Wartime, by guest writer James Robinson and guest artist Mike Wieringo. So Heroes Reborn is finally coming to an end, with one more giant crossover between the four titles. And oddly enough, Jim Lee and Brandon Choi have bailed out one issue early, leaving us with a guest writer, James Robinson, and guest artist, Mike Wieringo, who would one day go on to become the regular artist on the Fantastic Four. He's an artist I never really cared too much for, by the way. Always a little too Saturday morning cartoony for my taste. So this issue is going to be hard to review because it features the guest stars, the Wildcats, a Jim Lee superhero team from Image Comics. I read one or two issues when they first came out in the early 90s, and they just never appealed to me. And it's weird that they're appearing now that the Wildcats creator Jim Lee has left the book. And interesting is that Jim Lee sold all his characters to DC, so these Wildcats are now DC Comics characters. So don't hold your breath waiting for the Fantastic Four Epic Collection number 26. So the story begins in a way that's hard to describe. Galactus has been destroyed, and there are some kind of repercussions over in the Image Comics universe with the Wildcats, as their reality seems to be breaking apart or something. And then the smoke clears and we're back in New York just in time for an alien invasion. And we see the Wildcats team are there fighting off the aliens. And so the aliens are these big creatures in black armor. And on the Wildcats, it appears that Gorgon of the Inhumans is a member, and so is Giant Man, Hank Pym. Unless there are Giant Man and Gorgon ripoffs on the Wildcats, I'm not sure. But it looks like the destruction of Galactus caused a mix-up in the Marvel Universe and the Image Universe, and these two teams emerged. Too bad Savage Dragon isn't here. I like Savage Dragon. So one alien gets his helmet knocked off, and we learn it's a Skrull. Another member of the team is identified as Karnak. I suppose that really is Karnak, Gorgon, Giant Man on the team. What happens next isn't entirely clear, but it appears the entire fight is just on television, and the scene changes, and there's like these TVs, we can't see what's on the TV, but a voice says, "Enlist, enlist, enlist," like it was some kind of army recruitment commercial, and there's these two young guys there talking about joining up. Next, we head over to the Baxter Building, which is now quiet, vacant, and empty, like a meeting of the Moon Knight fan club, and there's a crackle of energy, and the Fantastic Four are teleported into their headquarters. There's Reed, Sue, Johnny, and some big purple guy with horns on his back. Reed says, "Quickly, team, we haven't a second to lose." We learn that the FF just got back from the Negative Zone, where they were looking for Ben Grimm, who must be lost inside. Sue makes a comment about how they better shut the door so that the two beings who are following them can't get through. And just then, the two beings that were following them get through. It's Annihilus and Defile. I don't know who Defile is. I guess he's an Image Comics character. He and Annihilus have been obviously become great friends. Defile says he doesn't want the FF to let their world know there are other realities. Yes, other realities where people read horrible comics like Wildcats. So Sue closes the door anyway, while the rest of the FF start fighting the two bad guys. Annihilus gets punched really good by the big purple guy, but then he gets up and he says, "One punch to defeat me? No, that will not suffice." And then Johnny says, "That punch was just a setup for this." And I can't really tell what he does next. I see flames and feet. I guess they're Annihilus's feet, and he's getting shot backwards through a hole in the wall. Defile is about to chop down on the invisible woman. It's woman. I guess she never went by the name of Invisible Girl in this universe. So Reed wraps his body around the file first and tosses him through the same hole in the wall, which is the portal to the negative zone, the one that Reed told Sue to close, but I guess she didn't close it. So Reed goes flying through the portal too, and the big purple guy grabs one of Reed's long stretchy arms, and Johnny says, "Grab him, Jeremy! Pull him back!" Ah, so the guy's name is Jeremy. And so Jeremy does succeed in pulling Reed back through the portal, and they close the door behind him. And Reed calls Nick Fury on the whatever communicator, but instead, he gets a guy at S.H.I.E.L.D. who says that Nick Fury is dead, killed in a battle with Dr. Doom's forces. Reed tells the guy that he has come up with a way to defeat the alien invaders and ask him to assemble the teams. Assemble everyone! So on the next few pages, we see the superhero teams of the world assembled. There are the Avengers with Captain America, Scarlet Witch, Thor, and some other people I don't recognize. The crossover universe would be a lot more fun if I knew who all these characters were. There are members from Stormwatch. Vision is a member of the team, along with a lot of characters I don't recognize. And then there is the team Wetworks, which sounds like a Golden Shower sex club in New York City, not a superhero team. Hawkeye is a member of that, and I don't know what that says about Hawkeye. And then there are the members of Wildcats, with Giant Man and Gorgon. Next, we see two agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. talking, and they want to find Captain America. The real Captain America, the one in the Avengers, isn't Steve Rogers. So now, Steve Rogers is back in his 1970s nomad identity. Next, they finally explain who the alien invaders are. They are the Daemonites. They're working with the Skrulls to try to take over Earth, and for some reason, Dr. Doom has joined forces with the aliens. We learn that the people on Earth carry around these manual scanners to determine if other people are Daemonites or Skrulls in disguise. And Reed has invented some kind of scanner teaching technology device that will prepare a new recruit for combat in a matter of days. And the issue ends with these two young men from earlier in the issue. One of their names is P. Edmund Change, who goes by the name of Grunge. He's a couple years too late with that nickname. And the other is Rick Jones. No nickname needed. And they're ready to join up and fight the aliens. And then in the negative zone, in this big white void, we see one big shape, obviously the Thing, and he floats into this other guy who's been drifting along all by himself for a very long time. At least he says he has been, and I don't know who he is. He's still in shadows. But he's wearing some kind of like Iron Fist type mask. I doubt it's Iron Fist. We'll have to find out who he is later in the pages of Avengers Volume 2, Number 13, because this issue is over. And that is the end of Fantastic Four Volume 2, Heroes Reborn. And what a weird way for it to end. With some kind of what-if-type crossover story with Jim Lee's Image Comics characters. So bizarre. Before I move on to the rest of the crossover, a few thoughts on this run on Fantastic Four. At the time, in 1996-97, Marvel Comics was in serious trouble, serious financial trouble, filing for bankruptcy. So their big idea was to hire Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld to take over four of their flagship books, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Avengers, and Captain America, hoping that these two guys, who sold millions and millions of copies of really bad comics in the early 90s, would save Marvel from financial oblivion. It didn't work. When I first started this podcast back in 2010, I did an online search and found a website that had a poll where people rated the various Fantastic Four runs on a scale of 1 stars to 5 stars. I printed out the results of the poll, which I can't find what website I got it from anymore, but I still have the page I printed out. At the time, the most popular runs with over 3 stars were by Walt Simonson, Lee and Kirby, John Byrne, Mark Waid, and oddly enough, the 20 issues by Carlos Pacheco. The least popular runs included Tom DeFalco with 1.48 stars, which seems kind of low to me, Scott Lobdell with 1.5 stars, he's going to write the first 6 issues of Volume 3, and the least popular run of all with an average of 1 star, Jim Lee and Brandon Choi. And I don't think I can disagree with that. It's the worst Fantastic Four run of all time. The problem with these 13 issues is They are so boring. Some runs like Steve Englehart or even Tom DeFalco have a so bad they're good quality. But Heroes Reborn isn't so bad it's good. It's just bad and boring. Now I will admit, the first six issues with art by Jim Lee weren't all bad. Simply because I'm a lover of good comic book art and those first six issues look great. But the seven issues after he stopped drawing the book have no redeeming qualities at all. The thing that stands out to me is what a blatant commercial grab for cash these issues are. Nothing is left up to chance. Basically, they take the best stories from the Lee Kirby run and have Jim Lee retell these same stories over again. It's like the exact opposite of the Tom DeFalco run, where he was trying all kinds of crazy, bonkers shit, and you never knew what would happen next. It might be good, it might be bad, but at least he was trying something. With the Jim Lee run, it's all familiar and predictable, like the comic book version of a meal at McDonald's. Actually, it's kind of like a musician who does a bunch of cover versions of songs that were already popular, like the comic book version of Pat Boone. When I started Heroes Reborn, someone asked me what I thought the lowest point of Heroes Reborn was. I know I can answer that. It's the retelling of the Coming of Galactus story. What a giant steaming pile of poop that was. Badly conceived, badly executed, badly written, badly drawn. Actually, maybe it's not so badly conceived. A Groundhog Day type story with Dr. Doom constantly traveling back in time, trying to save the Earth from Galactus. That could have been a good idea. Oh, but boy, they really dropped the ball on that one. They should have told the story from completely from Dr. Doom's point of view, instead of having him just show up at a page or two each issue to deliver some exposition. It would be fun to see Dr. Doom try one thing and fail, try something else and fail, try again and again, until he finally saved the world. Dr. Doom was just a plot device to reset the timeline at the start of each issue. Other than that, he didn't really do much of anything. When the world was finally saved in part 4 of the crossover, I'm not entirely sure what Dr. Doom did differently that made the difference. So anyway, I would say that the issue 12 crossover would be the low point of Heroes Reborn. So, I think that's all I have to say about the Jim Lee, Brandon Choi run on the book. Let's resume World War 3. It's the Fantastic Forecast, episode 429, part 2. Avengers, volume 2, number 13, from November 1997. Winning and Losing by James Robinson and Michael Ryan. So we're back, and the space-time continuum has been torn asunder, and the Heroes Reborn universe and the Wildstorm universe, I guess we'll call it, have merged together. Oh, and boy, that's like a double dose of suckiness right there. So the Fantastic Four, Avengers, Wildcats, and Stormwatch get together, and Reed wonders where Wetworks are. I think you should ask Ben Grimm, he would know. Oh wait, I think he's talking about the superhero team. We see Wetworks, they're fighting a bunch of the aliens, and then Iron Man shows up and saves their asses. And then later, with all the other heroes, Iron Man shows up with Wetworks and tells them all where he's been. Sue mentions that she's lost her brother early in the alien invasion. Okay, wait a minute. So that means the blonde guy who's been hanging out with the Fantastic Four isn't Johnny Storm. What? I don't know who he is. This makes no sense to me. This is really awful. I don't know who these characters are. I'm starting to think that maybe this crossover is the low point of Heroes Reborn. Try doing a podcast on a comic where there's about 20 characters you don't know who they are. It's not easy. This may be the hardest podcast I've ever done. So Reed tells everyone that he's found out there are other dimensions out there, other realities. Some like theirs, only with subtle differences. Some where all the heroes are completely different. Some realities where there are no superheroes at all. And in one reality, there's animal people with talking mice and talking ducks. And then Reed says, by analyzing the data, I uncovered one truth. a startling truth.
We need to recruit the mice and ducks,
Grifter of Wildcats concludes. Okay, that's pretty funny. Reed says no, they need to tear the world back in two, because they are two realities in one. And frankly, let Jim Lee take those lame-ass characters over to DC, because Marvel don't want them. Get them out of here! So as Reed tells the heroes what they have to do, Dr. Doom and his alien minions are watching on a monitor, and Doom is giddy that since he knows what the heroes plan to do in advance, he might be able to defeat them. Back in the negative zone, the Thing and some other guy are floating around in a big white void, and Ben tells him that he has a propulsion pack that can shoot them out of this mess. But he only has one try, and he doesn't know which way to go. The other guy says, "You need a signpost, brother? I'm it." Back with the heroes, Reed's plan is this. There's a lock that is keeping the two realities together. Half of the lock is in the negative zone, and the other half is in Doom's castle in Latveria. The lock device needs to be turned off at both ends, so they need to split up into two groups. Reed will lead the Avengers and Stormwatch into the negative zone, and Iron Man, Wetworks, and Wildcats, and the rest of the FF will go to Latveria. But first, Reed has one important thing to do. He gives Sue a big kiss. I'm surprised he doesn't want to bring her with him. He loves to bang her in the negative zone. And that sounds a lot dirtier than I intended. Back with Dr. Doom, he dispatches the alien forces to get ready for the attacks. And then later, up on the Stormwatch satellite, they're getting ready for the attack on Latveria when the aliens show up and they attack first and... they blow the shit out of the satellite, killing Iron Man, Sue Storm, Hawkeye, and a bunch of characters that I don't know who they are, which is going to make this rest of this podcast a lot easier. Welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 429, part 3. Today, Iron Man, volume 2, number 13, from November 1997. No Time to Mourn, by James Robinson and Larry Stroman. So Reed is leading the mission into the negative zone, and he finds the nexus of realities where they can see some of the different types of universes Reed mentioned earlier. And then they encounter Annihilus and Defile, leading an army of Skrulls and Demonites. So of course a fight breaks out, and it takes several pages for the heroes to defeat them all. And back in space, where that satellite blew up, a spaceship comes in and finds some survivors, including Sue Storm, who used her force field powers to save herself. And they also find that big purple guy, Jeremy, and another guy named Majestic still alive. They say everyone else from the satellite must be dead. Of course, since this is an Iron Man book, I will assume that Iron Man survived too. Or did he? Next, we find Steve Rogers, Nomad, fighting a group of aliens when an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up, a woman who introduces herself as Priscilla Cateen. She says there's an emergency and his country needs him. Next, we see a group of four heroes guarding the negative zone entrance, including the Vision and Jack Hawksmoor. I do know who Jack Hawksmoor is. I used to be a fan of The Authority. I do respect The Authority. Iron Man shows up. He's alive. He tells the group that the satellite got all blown up. They ask how the Skrulls got through the satellite's defenses, and Iron Man replies, "I turned them off." And he starts attacking the four other heroes, defeating them pretty quickly. Just then, guess who comes out of the negative zone? Why, it's Ben Grimm, the Thing, and he sees what Iron Man has done. So they start fighting, and then that other character comes out of the negative zone. His name is Deathblow. Yeah, Deathblow. I've had a few Deathblows in my day. And he joins the fight, and he ends up stabbing Iron Man with a sword through one of his eye holes. And then as he dies, we learn that's not the real Iron Man. It was a Skrull. So later, Captain America arrives to lead the attack on Castle Doom, which is good timing because it's time for... Ooh, that was quick. Fantastic Forecast, episode 329, part 2. Captain America Volume 2 Number 13 from November 1997. World War 3 Part 4. War Without End by James Robinson and Ron Lim. So a bunch of US planes are heading toward Latveria. Captain America is leading the forces. He's on a plane with two new recruits, Rick Jones and his friend Grunge. Sue and Ben are on another plane, and Sue is thinking about her dead brother. And Johnny's replacement is lurking in the background. He comes over and he says it's been an honor serving in the Fantastic Four. And Ben calls him Jeremy and says he's proud to have him on the team. Jeremy? I thought the purple guy was Jeremy. Oh, shit. I'm the worst podcaster ever. Anyway, they finally arrive in Latveria. They all parachute out of the plane and they start fighting the alien forces led by Dr. Doom. And in the negative zone, Triton of the Inhumans gets killed. And back with the Skrull leader and Demonite leader, they're getting worried about the forces in Latveria, so they call out the Elementrons, a group of four superpowered beings with glowing red eyes, seemingly mind-controlled by the aliens. There's the Submariner, the Hulk, the Human Torch, who is alive, and some girl named Rainmaker. Ooh, that's a scary power. Don't make it rain! They start fighting the good guys, and in the battle, Sue has to stab her own brother with a sharp force field to the chest, killing him. The purple guy, whoever he has a heart attack from growing too big and dies. In the negative zone, Dr. Doom shows up to face Reed Richards personally, and meanwhile, at one of the locks, a guy named Hadrian seems to have sacrificed himself by jumping into the negative zone gateway. And at the other lock in Castle Doom, Captain America arrives, and so does Sue Storm, and she shoots Cap in the chest because she's a Skrull too. Ugh. Whatever happened to the Skrull scanners that they mentioned in an earlier issue? Cap tosses the shield and smacks Sue upside her head, and Rick Jones shows up. Cap gives him a hand grenade, asks him to destroy the lock. Rick tosses it into the other portal, and then there's a bright flash of light. Back with Reed and Dr. Doom, Reed says it looks like the good guys have won, and the two realities are being split apart. Dr. Doom says that no matter what, he will always be there in whatever universe to one day rule the world. And as the universe fades away, Reed says that he, Sue, Ben, and Johnny will always be there to stop him. And with that, everything fades out and the story comes to an end. Coming next time, we head back to the real Marvel Universe with Heroes Reborn, The Return, the 4-issue limited series, as well as Fantastic Four Volume 3, Number 1. And we learn what's been going on with Franklin since his family disappeared. How do the Fantastic Four and the Avengers return home after being trapped in the Onslaught Heroes Reborn universe? And whatever happened to Matthew Storm? Okay, don't hold your breath on that one. They mentioned in an earlier issue that Johnny and Sue's uncle, Matthew, had gone missing. I thought they would address it later. Obviously, not. So that's it for today. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes of iTunes and find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. Trying